Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview with the multi-talented Kim Crow. Kim has worked as a professional actress, writer, and director, not only in theater, but in film, in television, and commercials. She's a very accomplished voiceover performer as well, and has the distinction of being known affectionately to United States Defense Airline pilots as Bitchin' Betty, because hers was the first voice ever to be digitized and used in the United States and NASA applications. Listen to this articulate, charming woman tell the story of how she decided in the eighth grade what she wanted to be when she grew up, and how she pursued every aspect of that career. Kim's is an interesting and unusual and delightful story. So hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down. Finding wisdom's other words. Oh, you really can. And it's always there, like a silent hug from no. Says all on tap. Oh, I really can. Oh, I really can. Turn down all the noise so
welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being the person you really are. Not the person you think you're supposed to be. Not the person other people look like they are. Not the person they told you you should be. No, not even the person you think you are. Because it is entirely possible, although unfortunate, that you may not realize that you have skills, that you have capacities, that you have abilities that you're not currently aware of or don't have access to. As a therapist, unfortunately, I have seen over and over again people who are in denial for aspects of themselves. I've seen brave men who think that they are cowards. I've seen beautiful women who think that they're ugly. And unfortunately, many intelligent, interesting men and women who believe nobody wants to be with them. These are errors which they were forced to believe in a childhood that could not accept them for who they really were. There are all kinds of reasons for this. And although this primarily takes place in the family of origin, it's not the only place where a child can get the idea that something about him or her is not okay. We all hear the stories of bullying in school, and so we know that it is possible that that children who come out of homes where they are loved can hear from peers and even from teachers that there is something about them that isn't all right. And children take that to heart and are quite capable of first pretending that they're not that, and then getting so good at the pretense that they forget who they are. So, in the Lynn Show, I am hoping that if, when you listen to me talk about this, you think that it's possible that there is something about you which you don't have access to, or even something that you always wanted to be or have or do, but you've been reluctant or apprehensive or downright afraid to try. And if you want to talk to me about that, you can find me at my website, thelynshow.com. That is THELYNNE. Don't leave the E out of Lynn, thelynshow.com. There's an email tab up there. You can click on that, email me any question you have. You can get me to come and speak to your group or organization. You can get a copy of my book, When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. And you can listen to all the interviews I've ever done, including the one I'm about to air with Kim Crow. Kim is currently a member of the ensemble cast of Double Wide, playing at Florida Studio Theater. A sweet, compelling, interesting, inspiring story. And as you will hear her say, it is funny, it is interesting, it grabs you and doesn't let you go. And Kim's performance is simply perfect. So I hope that listening to this show and listening to Kim is making you want to come down and see the show. Now, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And I do that because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. And listening to Kim Crow, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. This is a woman who, at 5 years old, decided to run away from home to discover what she could discover. And in the eighth grade, at 13 or 14, had already decided that she not only wanted to be an actress, she wanted to tell stories, but she wanted to be a classical actress, the hardest kind. She comes from a very unique, unusual, and inspirational family. So listen to Kim tell the story of how she became the person that she really is. And here now is Kim Crow. Okay, I'm here with Kim Crow, and I'm explaining to Kim that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. Yes. Now, it's my understanding that you are multi-arted. I've never said that before, that you have many arts to which you are giving your life and making your living.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Now, I want to talk to you today, to some extent, about your the art of acting.
Yes.
Because I know you're about to open in a play at FSD.
Yes.
But I also want to know how you define yourself. What of the arts, what comes to mind if people ask you what you do or how you identify yourself? Or, yeah, I know.
No, how prescient of you, because there was on Facebook the other day, there was a Jungian little quiz test, and you had to choose pictures that you liked and all of these symbols and things, and mine came, one of my friends was the caregiver, and you had various things that your little contest would tell you, and mine said explorer.
Aha!
And I thought, wow, this really works. It's the truth. An explorer, probably, of the human heart.
Yes. Mm.
And telling those stories, mythos, myth, telling those stories, and loving it every step of the way, and being so grateful to be able to use my college degree to train for a life as an actress.
Do you primarily think of yourself as an actress?
Yes.
Okay. So then I only ask one question, and it is, can you remember, can you tell me the very first time in your life when acting, pretending to be something you weren't, telling stories, any of that drew you, seemed attractive to you?
It was a precocious child. My dad was a rocket engineer, and my mother was a psychic, social worker.
Your mother was a psychic social worker?
Yes, yes.
A psychic social worker?
Yes, worked with a parapsychologist.
Really?
From Duke University, sure.
Wow.
Because she could, I think through her tremendous gift of empathy and humor, reach adults and children who were unreachable, who spoke in dead languages or were severely autistic.
Really?
Yeah.
And this is going back a while.
Yeah.
At a time when I would have thought there'd been, well, there weren't a lot of people who were doing that.
No, no. But she was a natural.
Mm-hmm.
And two images of my mother. She was half Italian and half Irish. Yeah, Mom was from Denver, and it was the big, you know, her dad was Italian, her mother was Irish. It was, you know, but it was kind of interesting because everyone was an immigrant.
Ah, yes.
Everyone was an immigrant. And there was always a spare room in the basement of my grandmother's house for couples who got married too soon, or people on the lam. And my Irish grandmother would just shudder when she would see the nuns coming, knowing that they would want money.
Oh, God.
You know, and the nuns would be Mother Cabrini, and it's like, no. So there was a sense that we're all in the same boat, that anyone who arrives at your house is a guest.
Yes, yes.
And Mom, who did this extraordinary work with the forgotten or undesirable, or used to wear a little cashmere coat with a little mink collar and a button that said, "Be nice to me or I'll kill you." And I loved it. She's so, you knew where you stood with her.
Oh, my God.
In eighth grade, I had decided I was precocious. I skipped a grade. I was always into a lot of things. And somehow I got the impression that I was supposed to decide what I wanted to do with the rest of my life in eighth grade. And kind of get a jump on it, you know, so I could work up to it.
Do you have any idea how you arrived at that?
No, it just seemed time.
It seemed time. Never mind, I understand.
Right? Yeah. It's like when I ran away from home when I was five, you know.
That was time.
It was just, I had time to earn a living, time to go out.
So you have always,
little, you know, tricycle and go down the street.
So you've always been
the explorer.
Yes. And ahead of yourself.
Yeah.
Because most 5-year-olds are not running away from home, and most people in eighth grade are not deciding what they were going to do when they grow up. So you were kind of ahead of the curve.
But my mother was speaking to portraits of my Italian great-grandmother in the living room, the portrait would talk back, so I did, this was all normal.
That's right.
This was totally normal.
I love that. I love that image. You didn't hear the portrait, but your mother did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, all my high school pals would just love to see Mama Crow, and my dad, of course, was the brilliant, he was in Atomic Energy when it was called that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was basically a Laramie, Wyoming cowboy who was this brilliant engineer.
Wow.
And went from atomic energy to space, outer space, I think basically because he liked to blow things up. I'll never know for certain, but I have that feeling. You know, there's something about boys and bombs or something like that. But Mom, I came down in the kitchen, and one day I decided, I was pretty good at everything, except math, but Dad got me through that with a slide rule. I could see relationships between numbers, but for the life of me, I couldn't see how, if no two things are alike, how could one and one equal two? So it lost me there. I was never able to take that leap of faith. So I went down and Mom was in the kitchen. I said, Mom, I know what I want to be when I grow up. And she had her reading glasses on. She looked at me with her big brown eyes over the readers, and she said, yes, as if this is going to be the most important thing she's ever heard. Helen Hayes also would look at you like that. Helen Hayes would look at you like, whatever you're saying is the most important thing I've ever heard.
Wow.
I said, I want to be a classical actress.
How did you know what a classical actress was?
Who's the best actress you could be? Well, you told the hardest stories.
How did you know that?
TV.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
What did you see on TV that told you that a classical actress...
Probably The Avengers with Diana Rigg. Patrick McNee. Yeah. Good role model, Emma Peel.
No kidding.
And Mom looked at me, and her big brown eyes filled with tears. And I'm watching her flash like, oh my God, life is... Oh my God.
An actress? So really? Oh, hard.
Hard. And not only just an actress, but... Oh, you want to do Shakespeare? You want to do the play? It's like, you know, I could see that she could see me eating out of garbage cans for the rest of my life. And the first thing she said was, oh, why couldn't you do comedy? So that's like the sweetest thing in the whole world.
Right.
And that's, I guess, because I had such... terrific training.
Well, hold on. You know? Now, had you been in a play?
No.
Had you seen a play?
No. But wow. See, if you were an actor, you had to be good at everything. And I was good enough to
But
pass.
How did you know that?
Well, because actors have to do everything. They have to portray secretaries. They have to portray secret agents. They have to portray...
Yeah, but you know what? Forgive me, but... I know that this doesn't sound odd to you because you had that information, but it's like you came in with that information because you didn't get it anywhere. Do you know what I mean? I mean, you know, other kids who have been to plays or have been in plays or have been in school when they did plays or something, then they had some place from which to take this information, but you don't seem to have had that.
My aunt was an opera singer, but I do.
But you didn't.
I didn't have that gift.
Well,
I was a, you know, guitar, long blonde hair.
Well, all right, great. All right, fine. So you tell Mommy, and she's not. She wishes it were other, but so
comedy. You can still be an actor, but please comedy.
Right.
And
so then, what happens?
Yeah.
So what do you do in high school?
I do high school musicals.
Oh, you do. You audition.
Yeah, and. Yeah.
Is there a drama class, club, something?
Sort of. There was this really cool, our French teacher. People were very kind to me and encouraged me in my devilry. I played the male lead with a beetle wig in Tea House of the August Moon, you know, Zucchini. And musicals. We had a very strong American musical theater.
So
I was never really good enough. I had to be kind of the lead, or you know, because I wasn't good enough to be in the chorus.
Jesus.
See, the chorus is fabulous.
So did you take any lessons? Are there any acting classes? Are there any singing classes?
No.
Are there piano lessons? Nothing.
No.
Nothing.
No.
You're just gonna do this thing because. It's what you're
going to
do.
Well, my dad was busy going to the moon, which is, everyone...
Yes, and your mother was talking to
exactly,
right.
And breaking through with autistic.
Right,
yeah,
right.
So it's like...
Yes, I got it. I got it. Okay, so, but you did understand that you should go to a college where they had some of this.
Yes, and dad and mom, God bless them. Because I was the last child. I have an older brother, older sister. Mom had RH factor, so there are miscarriages. I shouldn't have been born.
Of course
not. Oh, the whole nine yards. Mm-hmm. And dad was going through a huge job change right when I was going into college, and it was like, it was dicey times for them, and they're in their they're not spring chickens. They should be looking at retirement. And now they're looking at kind of getting the last one in the nest. So I narrowed it down to four schools. And I had written a short story, thank God, in high school that Pearl Buck was the judge of the contest. And I wrote about my dad's grandmother, who went out west at age 18 to die. She had consumption.
Mm-hmm.
And she was from Iowa, and she ended up in a mining. She had her high school degree, so she ended up teaching the silver miners' children and met Rollo Crow. And I did it as a diary, kind of a first person. It's the only time I ever saw my dad cry. But Pearl Buck liked the story, which was a good thing because I was a mess in math from skipping fifth grade and, you know, Dad helping me with slide rules because one and one, how could, you know, I was gone, misstep there. And I wanted a small school in a large city. I needed that kind of support. And somehow, I think it's probably because of the Pearl Buck thing, that I got into Catholic U, which was a huge star school. Still maybe, I don't know. Father Hartke would do anything to get his kids work. He would create theaters. And there was he would create the still in existence, National Players, America's oldest rep company. This whole liberal arts thing and this whole kind of spiritual foundation of actors, it's a good thing to be an actor.
Ooh.
It's a good thing to tell these stories, to hold the mirror up.
Wow.
It's a really good thing. So I was very comfortable with that. And somehow I had over-elected. Because once again, I wasn't really good with the numbers in front of courses. So I was over-electing in grad courses because I really liked the titles.
Right. So you didn't recognize that they were grad courses?
No, and it was like Psychology of Prejudice, and my nose would just bleed every time I went to it because I was... And my best girlfriends were black, militants. And cause, and here I'm world's whitest, you know, so... It was heavenly. We would do our homework, then go see Roberta Flack or Jesus Christ Law Today or whatever.
Okay, so,
anyway, so
are you getting a what, a fine arts degree? Are you getting a
BA
in
speech and drama? But I had over-elected so much with these grad courses. To this day, I don't know what happened, but I was told to report to the dean of the College of Arts and Science. And I walk in, and he says, "What does Ophelia mean?" Not, "Hi, are you Kim Crow?" He might have gotten me mixed up with someone. And I said, "One who loves?" And he said, "Yes. How about Desdemona?" "Against the devil?" He says, "Okay, you got a choice. You can go get your master's along with your bachelor's. It hasn't been done before. We can set you up. You can take courses all over the city, and we'll set you up a special program. You can train abroad, or you can quit. You're wasting your time." And I went, no, I really like it here. I really like doing it.
Don't send me away.
No, please don't send me away. And he says, "What would you like to do?" And I said, "Well, I always dreamed of, after the 4 years, to train in England. Because I wanted to know how to walk and talk at the same time. American actors, we have this passion. We have this incredible passion, imagination, and of course we have lucrative ways to earn a living as an actor. But the Brits know how to walk and talk at the same time, mm-hmm. how to make a clean cross. And at the end of being with the dean, he had given me a sabbatical from Catholic U, set me up, now they would call it a junior year abroad, but they didn't have it back then. And I called Mom and Dad and said, "Well, it's the same money. Can I go to any? I've just been kicked out of college." And so they said, "Yes." They supported me. I had been entertaining the troops that Christmas. One of the things Father Hartke did was there'd be 10 cute co-eds, count them 10, 4 groovy guys and 2 Catholic priests, And he talked the Pentagon into, as a division of national players, Uncle Funky's Mistletoe Review would go entertain at all the officers, entertain, I did 3 weeks with the Army, 1 week with the Air Force, entertaining the troops at Christmas. I thought that's what actors do. I thought you give blood, you give blood, and you entertain the troops at Christmas.
You had no idea.
I had no idea.
That's amazing.
I had no idea.
You go off to London. And?
Well, Diana Rigg took me under her wing.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, no, no. She said, oh, okay, you're going to be playing roles like this, so here's how to walk like Emma Peel. And
really?
Here's how to play tag on stage.
What does that mean?
You play tag to, if you're in a long run. You have to touch the other actor on stage and say you're it during production.
In case they didn't know it was there.
Well, it's leaving no room for doubt. You're it. And she called me one day. She said, can you make the matinee? I had met her folk singing in Covent Garden at night to earn extra money. And she said, come see. And they were doing the Scottish play, and there were only two people on stage, Lady M, Diana Rigg, and Mr. M, Lord M, Dennis Quilley. Lord M was it. Lord M got right behind Lady M, and Diana knew. She was, if the devil was, and he put one arm around her waist, then put his head in her neck, tweaked her bosom, and said, wah, wah, you're it. Her next line, this was life-changing, her next line was, screw your courage to the sticking place. It changed my life. It changed my life. It's like, oh, they're so good they can do this.
Yes, they can screw around.
Exactly. Exactly. And that appealed to me, too.
Yeah. Comedy. Your mother, God bless her, she was right.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So you study in England for a year.
Yes.
And do you are you beginning to get it now about what actors do?
Yes.
Okay. So then what happened?
Came home, ready to go into my senior year. Was the first undergrad to get a lead in a major production at Hartke Theatre, doing The Rivals, English mannerist. Not mannerist, Rococo fun stuff, ingenue stuff. And my mother died very suddenly, closing night of the show.
Oh, my.
So that splintered me a lot. The kind of displacement of being able to do a show after that, during that. So I had over-elected so much, and I did, it's a mistake looking back. It's probably one regret I have in my life that I didn't stay for a second semester, but I didn't want Dad to have to put out the money. And so I graduated early, took all my exams and departmental exams, and graduated in December. And then was later notified I was Phi Beta Kappa, Best Actress of the Year, and P.S., can you do the leads in National Players repertory season across the country?
Yeah, but it's a mixed blessing, isn't it? I mean, you're in grief at the same time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a real bitch because you can't really enjoy it. You can't really, there's the Yiddish word is kvel.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
You
yeah,
can't
yeah,
really
yeah.
do that.
Yeah.
Because.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Just, right?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What bad timing
the
universe had for you. So what did you do? I mean, did you go and do the shows and all that? But
I kind of knitted Mount Rushmore in wool during the car rides. And then I left at December. I left December. My Auntie Mimi, the opera singer in Denver. So I stayed with her for a bit. mom's sister and just kind of got my feet back.
Yeah.
Everything
yeah,
was
process,
kind of
yeah.
tasting flat to me.
Yeah, so
it's just flat. So that helped. And then it was time to find day jobs and start a theater.
Where were you living?
Dad had moved down to Huntsville, Alabama, Rocket City, Marshall Space Flight, to be with my brother and sister and their families. And so I'd gone to New York, had an agent the first day. Things weren't happening fast enough for me.
Well, apparently things were happening fast for you, period.
Yeah, but it's like not fast enough in the good stuff. So I came down to Huntsville, stayed with Dad, got a day job, and Jimmy Carter was president, and he had Comprehensive Educational Training Act, CEDA grants,
mm-hmm.
to retrain people who were in professions that would have high unemployment, like actors. I thought, well, I'm going to write a grant and get a theater at the Von Braun Civic Center. And so I did.
So you wrote a grant for you to open a theater?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's still in existence, still really? Running after, love, 30, 40 years, whatever it is. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
with five other professionals and a great amount of volunteers, and the people that we trained work in the business.
So the grant was to open the theater to teach people the skills that they would use in theater.
And develop new plays and do a season, a year-round season of plays. So we would do a Shakespeare in the summer. We would do vernacular. I wanted to do The Last Meeting of the Knights of the White Magnolia for a Southern audience. I was always kind of pushing.
No kidding.
Pushing things because it's holding the mirror up. It's not brain surgery. We're not in any physical peril, except maybe sometimes entertaining the troops. But it's not like people who are doing some really heavy lifting. We're telling stories and hoping that people get ideas that somehow... There was a wonderful marketing campaign for one of the plays that I've done that I'm kind of a moving target for, and that play is called Wit by Margaret Edson. And their marketing said, great theater can change your life.
Mm.
And it was because of that play and the outrage. I mean, theaters had to have audience talkbacks that started that whole.
Mm-hmm.
But it also was the impetus to have the vaccine for the little babies coming up for cervical cancer.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, it's I would have a oncological GYN come up to me after the show and say, you know, I've given a million pelvic exams, tomorrow I'm going to do it differently. So you
wow.
never know what little things by being part of this collective hallucination that we call theater, that kind of suspends space and time, can do.
So now what are you, 23 when you do this? All right, so you're 23 and you write this grant and you and these four people,
mm-hmm.
you start a theater,
mm-hmm.
and then what happens?
My first marriage ended about the time the grant ended, and I was ready to move on. I always balanced classical with total contemporary. Back then we had dinner theater tours of Neil Simon.
Mm-hmm. Dunk, mommy.
Yeah. I just started working and touring, and meanwhile, back in Huntsville during Twickenham Repertory Company days, our company photographer was an aerospace engineer, and he said, Kim, can you help us with the project? I said, sure. They said, can you say some vocabulary into this machine? We're trying to digitize the human voice. I said, happy to. And it turns out that the pipes digitize like butter.
Yours?
And, yeah. Mm-hmm. We were coming out with a new generation of fighter plane. The cockpit lights, idiot lights, were too slow for the reaction time for the fighters. They had determined that a woman's voice, because they were all men, would get their attention. Mm-hmm. NASA, meanwhile, had already set out to go to Mars. And they were piggybacking funding on the back of national defense, because they were trying to set up communication satellites with identification systems. It's like if you were going to fly to Mars, you know, you'd turn your little ignition key and it would say, good morning, Lynn, did you have your coffee this morning? You know, is it sweet enough for you? They'd have your psychological profile. And then, it, just like HAL 2001. Mm-hmm. So I turned out to be the first HAL. I thought, yay, all the good speech classes, and became who the pilots call. I was the original Bitchin' Betty. I love engineers because my dad was an engineer. The rocket engineers at that time were doing calculations on cocktail napkins, bringing it to Von Braun and saying, Dr. Von Braun, we can't figure out how wide to make the diameter of the Saturn rocket to get to the moon. And Von Braun said, what is the diameter of the opening of the largest hangar we have at the Redstone Arsenal? He said, make it 10 feet smaller than that. In other words, get the car in the garage.
That's right.
So when the first flyboy took off, the chip that my voice was imprinted on had a glitch in it. So there was a command over and over and over. And out on the tarmac, engineer, flyboy flips the cockpit. Well, what you think, what you think? And he said, oh, it's swell. But that Bitchin' Betty. And for years, I couldn't tell anyone. I do vocabulary updates, you know, all the time.
Oh, my God.
Decided I wanted to do, after Twickenham Rep, closest major market was Atlanta. But I wanted to be a voice actress. It was a boys' game. Forget about it. But I went, wait a minute, I couldn't tell anyone. Can't tell anyone.
What your resume was.
Whoops, right. A legend. Whoops. Right. So I right. taught myself the engineering. I think Dad helped me. And I just get it done. Get the job done. Tell the stories you want to tell. Just don't limit. Don't limit.
Don't limit. Explore.
Explore. What's the worst that can happen? You get hit by a car, you're dead. Oh, well, you got to die sometime.
Boy, it's the truth, and so far, exactly right.
Yeah. This September at Kennedy Space Flight, they're doing an entire new ride, Mission to Mars simulation. You'll see me everywhere as the Mars mission commander. Yeah, so I got my wish. Yeah, yeah, facing retirement. So, okay. All these years later, you know, with every step of life in this business, it's like, oh, I get to have the face of an astronaut. I couldn't dream of anything as cool.
No, of course not. Of course not. Talking about putting the mirror up.
Yeah. So, very, very lucky.
Okay. So how did you wind up in Sarasota?
Moved here from Atlanta. Let me see. We're just getting over... Screen Actors Guild. I was interviewing Burt Reynolds because I heard he loved using Georgia talent, and it was for the Atlanta Screen Actors Guild magazine, and we were just recovering from a strike. And he said, Kim, get your baby butt down to Florida. There are more union theaters than any other state in the country.
Wow.
It's going to be a big film production center. And I had turned 30, had my ears pierced, my hair permed, and I said, I'm going to Florida. With any sense, I should have gone to Disney. But I saw Siesta Key, and I went, I'll make it work. Met my husband here, and started immediately working. And
the rest is history. So now, tell me about the play, Double Wide.
Double Wide.
And it opens August...
2nd.
2nd. And it runs...
Through the 20th.
Through August the 20th. 20th. Okay, so tell us...
It's a rolling world premiere.
What does that mean, rolling?
That means four theaters get to world premiere it, which is good for the theaters and publicity and good for the play. It's written by a wonderful playwright who just won the Helen Hayes Award. We worked with him last month for a little lectern reading and had rewrites then and rewrites. It had played at Florida Rep, pardon me, where I did my first production on Whip way back when. So I got to see the show. Stephen Spotswood, the playwright, has his master's from Catholic U. So I knew I was going to love it because of the humanity involved. Mm-hmm. It was big humanity. It is, there's something about this play. First of all, it's sweet, and it's about sweet, wonderful, blue-collar people who are just wanting a very humble piece of the American dream, mm-hmm. and how they just can't quite, no matter how many jobs they work in a day, get ahead. And there's something so contemporary Americana about it, in that something I was saying to Steve, there's something about it that reminds me of Grapes of Wrath, mm-hmm. or that Henry Fonda would be playing the lead. Mm-hmm. There's something, or Spencer's Mountain, mm-hmm. that movie from the early 60s. They're just good people. Who are struggling. Mm-hmm. Good marriage, teenage daughter. I play Coral, the matriarch, who plays the slot machines at the casino. I'm retired. I don't garden. I don't like animals. What the hell else am I going to do? Mm-hmm. And so I get to do the comedy, which is lovely. Mm-hmm. But it's so refreshing to have a play that literally has its fingers on the pulse of a great segment of our country. Mm-hmm. And as we baby boomers get older, I'm seeing a vanishing middle class. I was talking with the lead actress, who's a pal of mine at Florida Rep. I said, what has the audience reaction been? And she said, the people who live here are thrilled because it's vernacular and it's their problems. And the people who vacation here think it's highly educational. And it's like, okay, I'll take that in a heartbeat. But it's a wonderful struggle about really wonderful people, and the playwright just today, we just got our new revisions of the script again, so to have someone so actively involved in tweaking, he has such an ear for dialogue, he can write a curtain line that mm-hmm. you wouldn't believe. It's just, I'm so excited to be doing it. I'm so excited to be
doing it. Yeah, and it's
a good tale.
What?
A good tale.
Yeah, and you're in it on the street level. I mean, you're making it happen, right?
Yes,
it's being created, right?
Yes,
that's very exciting.
Yes.
It's not like a play, you know, it's a wit, you know, seeing people are you doing it like them? Are you not doing it like them? Whatever, right?
Yeah,
you're inventing the character, right?
Yeah.
It's
great. Yeah.
It's great.
And it's neat to be a part of a living play that's going to move, you know, keep moving on.
Yeah.
Because there simply isn't anything written about just regular people.
Well, no, Grapes of Wrath is pretty much the only thing I can think of.
Yeah. The old mm-hmm. stuff.
Especially
rural, in that rural being outside of anything urban.
Yes. Yes, and it's interesting, you know, you're talking about how decent these people are.
Yeah.
So much of the theater that I see has people lambasting each other, or offending each other, hurting each other. I really don't understand why we have to see so much of that. So I can't
wait. It's refreshing.
Yeah, really. And not only that, but you know, when you talk about holding up the mirror, and the other thing you said about theater helping people alter their lives. Well, if the mirror you're holding up is how cruel people can be to each other. I mean, really, do we really need to do that? That, you know, it seems counterproductive. So, great, yeah. I'm a fan. And, okay, so, is there anything else on the horizon that we want to talk about? Decide that you're going to be,
Kennedy Space Center.
Yeah, right.
Mars in September. Later on this afternoon, I'm finishing up an audiobook for a high school friend of mine who has taken it upon himself. We work stage crew together in high school. He's translating the Cherokee language, which is an oral tradition, into English phonetically, and then telling Cherokee tales.
Do you mean you're speaking the Cherokee
I had to learn some Cherokee. Yes.
Give me an example.
Uktena, which is a snake doctor or a dragonfly.
Wow.
Yeah, Uktena. Lami. Lami. Garden of Eden. Lami.
Oh, my God.
So I've spent this past week learning, trying to not butcher the Cherokee languages for the little kids coming up. But they'll help to keep their traditions alive.
Yes.
So that's been this week, along with learning lines for Double Wide and seeing what trouble I can get into. I'm always fascinated that my process is just the same as my husband, who's a fine artist, a painter. We all layer in. We refine the drawing, black, white, contrast. Refine, layer, like a leaf of palimpsest. And then the final coating of the fixative, and it's like this wonderful collaboration of the lovely artist at Florida Studio, whole set of them I haven't worked with yet, which is just delightful. And Jason Cannon's directing. Roy John's wonderful stage manager. I've taken a beach walk with him. I've never gotten a chance to work. Scenic design, Isabella and Mariah Curly Clay. Costume designer is Jeffrey Cohn. Adrian Weber is the shop manager. Lighting designer, Mike Wood. I've only met Alexa Eldridge, who is also an intern, but she has another title at FST. It's her second year as an intern, so mm-hmm. she's an associate artist. Nick Piacente, Todd Lycia, Gisela Chipe. Can't wait to meet them all.
Oh, you haven't met them yet?
No, I haven't met them all.
You're not in rehearsal yet?
No.
When does rehearsal start?
Tuesday.
Ah,
Tuesday.
Perfect. Okay, so I only have one more question. And it is, having given a life to this work, and I don't know, in the eighth grade, you're what, 12? Right? You have given a life to this work. Is there anything you would say about that, about what that's like, or how you feel about it, or anything that that comes to mind about what it is like to have given a life to this work?
I had a ball. And the phone keeps ringing. Mm-hmm. At every stage of the game, the phone keeps ringing. It's really important for artists coming up to know how to work. I'm so grateful to have had good training and continue to develop that. I teach voiceover and on-camera acting because that's those are very good skill sets for individual people, either out of a bedsitter in New York City or whatever. You can another burner on the stove that you can light.
Another way to make money, right.
But you got to know how to work.
What does that mean? When you say work, you really have
to pay attention. You have to work very hard at your craft.
To do it well.
To be remotely competitive to remotely show up on anyone's radar screen because there's so much noise.
Yeah, right. So many people trying.
Well,
right?
always been that. It's always been competitive.
Right.
But I am amazed. I am amazed. I'm amazed that only a very few artists train. They train so they get better and better and better at each step of the game.
Could you give an example of what the training is? I mean, what the work is?
If you're going to do voiceovers, for God's sake, train with someone who's still working.
Who knows what's going on in the...
And how to get there. Save yourself from some time. If you're going to do film, get out, volunteer, do film. Learn how to be a director as well. Theater, same thing. Learn
all the skills.
All the skills, because you're going to take turns.
Right.
And
if you want to work, the more skills you have, the more work you'll get.
Bingo. Should you find yourself on a directing track? If you're an actor, you can get a performance out of your actors so quickly.
Right.
Have a life along the way. You don't lose anything in your... Every now and then, maybe once a year, I get angry. Once a year, I get really angry. And I'll get real self-pity, like, oh, so I was the 5th and 7th woman in history to play Vivian Baring. Why can't I be the first? Or blah, 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 blah. And I called my friend... Jack, who was in the original, we were in high school together, did our first professional show, Summer Stock at LaSalle Music Theater, in the chorus. He was a great dancer and a hell of a nice guy, just a fine fellow. And I said, Jack, I'm just me. I'm just so man. He's always like third choice. I'm third choice. I made a hell of a career being someone's second and third choice.
Right.
But it's like He says, Kim, wait a minute. Let me see if I am understanding you correctly. One, you live by the beach with the most marvelous guy in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Two, they're writing plays for you.
They're writing plays for you?
Yeah.
Who's writing plays for you?
I've done a lot of new play developments. Let me get this straight. You live by the beach. You're married to the greatest guy in the world for like over 30 years. Excuse me, good marriage. They're writing plays for you. You're the 5th and 7th woman to play. He says, what did you say your problem was?
Yeah, right.
And I said, got it.
Mm-hmm.
Luckiest in the world.
Yeah, it's all perspective, right?
Yeah. And now to help Stephen and Florida Studio Theater bring this delightful play that needs to be seen because it's fun and you'll laugh and your heart will be touched. Bring that to audiences and sleep in my own bed. Thank you. It's been 11 years since I slept in my own bed.
So to work, right? Yeah, right. I love it. It's a great place to stop. Thank you so much, Kim.
Oh, Flynn, my pleasure.
Lucky, lucky, lucky. Lucky to live the life she lives, to do the work she does. And my God, she does everything. So when you listen to Kim, you can hear it. Kim is Kim. She's not pretending. There's no guile. She is simply the person she is and has always been. Kim the explorer. Kim, the person who pursues what she knows is her path, with passion, with commitment, and with acceptance. So when you listen to Kim, it is my hope, as I said in the opening, that you're asking yourself, is this how I feel about my life? Have I done everything that I wanted to do or be? Do I feel lucky that I am the person that I am and that I live the life that I live? Well, as I said in the opening, if you suspect that there is more to you than you are currently experiencing, and you want to talk to me about that, please do go up on my website, thelinshow.com, and talk to me about that, because it may very well not be too late to get it back, to be the person you really are. So, as always, I hope you got something that you can use from this show. And so, as always, I hope you got something you can use from this show. Something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang.